Hey, it's Jamie Sumner, left guard from 1994-95, and this is the Bunch of Nuts podcast with my boys Dan and Cass. Go Bucks.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Bunch of Nuts podcast. I'm Dan, here with Big Cass. On today's episode, we have a very special guest, one of the writers from the Silver Bulletin, Blake Piscardi. How you doing, buddy? Great to have you on.
I'm doing well. It's great to be here with you guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, so, it's a joy to have you on, man.
It's a big joy to have you on, Blake. But let's cut right into it. Big news today out of, you know, the Woody Hayes. Huge coaching overhaul. Ryan Day is, you know, he's chopping heads. He's not messing around. Basically, the entire defensive side of the ball, besides Larry Johnson, gone. I guess I'll start with you, Blake. What were your initial thoughts after hearing all of this today?
I was a fan of the moves. I was glad to see that Day is not afraid to swing, and I think he's handling the whole situation very well. Obviously, you know, the defense hasn't performed up to Ohio State standards over the last two seasons, and how much of that was Jeff Hafley and how much of that was personnel, we're going to find out next year. But I think Knowles is going to be a great fit. Obviously, any true Buckeye will tell you that they love Kerry Combs, right? He did a ton for the program. You hate to see him go like that. You hate to see, you know, his second stint here, you know, kind of go the way that it went. But I think that Eliano and Walton are going to be great additions to the staff. And then switching to the offense there, Justin Fry's going to be, I think he's going to be a home run hire. Mm-hmm. I wasn't a huge fan of the way the offensive line played this year with, you know, not having everybody play at their position. You know, kind of like that best five mentality that they had. But I think having everybody back to the regular positions next year, it's going to be – the offense is going to be scary, I think. And you just give that offense, you know, even a B-minus defense, they'll be in the national championship game.
I agree 100%. I love the moves too, and I'm a big Kerry Combs guy. I mean, I synced him down during the Maryland game when I was doing my stint with Fox. He did a lot, obviously. I mean, you go down the list of first-round draft picks during his first stint. I mean, you're talking Malik Hooker, Eli Apple, Marshawn Lattimore, Garyon Conley. And I tend to agree that, you know, he recruited Damon Arnett, although Hafley gets the – I think Jeff Hafley gets the nod for that first-round pick. But, you know – The list goes on and on. I mean, even Sean Wade played pretty well at times this season when he got on the field for the NFL. But it's time for, you know, some changes. And Ryan Day, you know, showed a big cojones and, you know, hiring these guys. And, you know, I love the Walton pickup big time just because, you know, if Jalen Ramsey, who's arguably top three corner in the league, is praising this guy, it, you know, just like Darrell Revis, you know, praise Jeff Hafley, it makes you, you know, think that, hey, you know, we're right in the right track. Again, on the offensive side, Justin Fry was my pick to come in as the offensive line coach. And, you know, as a former offensive lineman myself, this, like you said, it's finally get these guys back to their original positions. I believe Thayer Munford went from a first rounder to maybe now a late second to an early third just because he moved the tackle, but a lot. He's going to be a great pro just because he's versatile. But I think he lost first round status this year just because one, he's got that clip of Aiden Hutchinson just completely bulldozing him. But I love the Justin Fry pick because he's young, he can recruit, and he's turned some UCLA guys into studs. It's imagine what he could do with Ohio State talent.
My favorite hire is the Walton hire. Just because he's an Ohio State guy to begin with. I feel like that's something that's so huge that no one talks about. He's a guy that understands the culture here, even though, you know, he hasn't really been here in a while. He's been in the NFL for 13 plus years. But, I mean, he was a gamer at Ohio State, had 10 career interceptions as his time as a Buckeye. That's unreal, especially when he played in an era where they didn't really throw the ball that much. And I just love that basically. I mean, he's bringing 13 years of NFL experience. You mentioned Jalen Ramsey loved him. And I mean, he was a defensive coordinator at one point too. So it's almost like you know, he, Jim Knowles will have a guy to kind of pick his, he could, a guy who he could pick his brain, because this guy was, you know, an NFL defensive coordinator top of the competition, NFL defensive coordinator for the Rams, only for one season. Defense wasn't terrible though. I was researching it. They went like 7-9 that year as a typical Jeff Fisher team. Not an elite defense, not a bad defense, but a solid defense. But if you have a solid NFL defense, I guarantee you're going to dominate in the Big Ten. And he has talent at the cornerback position and the safeties position. So, I mean, he's going to do numbers in the defensive backs room. And then, obviously, we got Perry Alano. And, I mean, you see what he did at UC with Sauce Gardner, Kobe Bryant. Great hire, in my opinion.
He's going to make the safeties mean. That's what I like about it.
And he has, you know, though, he has
physicality back.
Yeah, and we have the talent though too. So he's gotten the most out of some guys at UC that maybe weren't the most talented, but now, you know, they're going to be high.
Here's the question: can he turn Bryson Shaw into a gamer?
If he turns Bryson Shaw into a gamer, he deserves a lifetime contract.
You know. 17, number 17. We got to circle that name. But anyways, yeah, he's going to turn to safeties. I mean, already physical safeties. I mean, Bryson Shaw is physical. He laid the wood on some guys sometimes during the season a little bit. We know what Josh Proctor could do. Ask Jack Cohn. I mean, the thing is can he get these guys to buy in real quick? I mean, and of course, Tanner McAllister, what he did at Oklahoma State, it's going to be fun to watch this DB room. Believe it or not, you know, DB room is very, very talented. And we're not even mentioning Sonny Styles, who may not even play this year, even though he's reclassifying. I always got to mention that guy. I've done numerous of his games, actually only like four, but that's a lot in a little website calling games. But Sonny Styles is the real deal. I mean, I only got to really see his pure athleticism in basketball, but it's imagine what he could do with Sonny Styles and the rest of the guys that's going to be playing safety.
Yeah, I mean, that room is absolutely loaded. I'm trying to see right now. Does Jack Cohn technically have another year of eligibility for Notre Dame?
I think so.
I think he might.
He probably does.
I think he does.
Or COVID will give him that free eligibility that he can use that everybody kind of got this year.
If Bradley Robinson can get a seventh year as a long snapper, got to take it.
Because I'm just saying, because you mentioned Jack Cohn and Proctor. That's week one next year. If Jack Cohn's still playing, look out, because Proctor's going to be hunting again.
Oh man, it's gonna be fun.
Oh, it is. But I mean, with all the good news coming out of the Woody today, I guess the sad news is Kerry Combs no longer a Buckeye. A lot of people were very bummed about that online today. I mean, I was bummed. We saw it coming. I didn't think it was gonna happen because it was interesting how this all kind of unraveled, because you didn't hear anything after a national championship game. It was a few days. And by that, you would think, you know, these guys are safe. But Ryan Day acted really quickly. He basically made these moves instantly, which is good. I thought that was a smart move by him. Get the guys out and get the new guys in instantly. There wasn't any, you know, gap where we didn't have a position coach. He basically did it all in one, you know, one motion, which is fine. But Kerry Combs, no longer a Buckeye. I mean, what are you guys' thoughts on Kerry Combs? What's your favorite memory of him as a Buckeye?
I was writing the piece for him this morning that he was going to be out, and I kind of paused for a minute, honestly, because I was sad to see him go, because I alluded to him as the juice man twice, because you remember back in 2014, the whole bring the juice mantra that, that they had around the team, and you just see him on the sidelines every single game. He's always lighting people up. You always see, like, who's this white-haired guy? But he's just on fire, it's on the sideline, jumping up and down, more energy than the Energizer Bunny. You know, I mean, he's electric. And you saw the talent that he can produce and the way he can motivate those guys. And he feels like he really is one of you right in the huddle. So, I mean, he's given his entire heart and soul to the program. And whatever he ventures to next, whether it's another job or retirement, obviously we wish him the best.
I think one of my – yeah, go ahead.
There's going to be – shoes to fill that are sizable, and especially just in that factor of, you know, just that energy that you have on the sidelines, because the players respond to that. Obviously, I mean, if the sideline's dead from the coaching staff, then it kind of deflates you as a player. But he shows you, you know, game in, game out, practice, that he believes in you and that he's going to want to get the best out of you. And whether he has to look like a crazy nut on the sideline or whether he's going to coach you and be stone serious, he's going to get the most out of you. And I think that's an underrated part of Coach Combs that will be missed.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. I think my favorite moment was last year when we beat Clemson and he's out there doing confetti angels on the field. I just shows how his character and how much he loved this university and, you know, loved coaching. But, you know, I appreciate the energy he brought every week. It didn't matter if they were playing Western Michigan or that team up north. He brought the same juice every game. And, you know, the few seconds that I got to meet him on the sidelines for the Maryland game was like a very intense 30 seconds, even though it was just a picture with him. You know, just a great individual, and we loved watching him on the field, just getting the dudes pumped up.
Yeah, I mean, my favorite memory of him was obviously the confetti angels. I liked, in the other Sugar Bowl, after Evan Spencer threw the touchdown to Mike Thomas. If you watch us on the sideline, he's like getting all hyped up, giving Spencer like a high five coming out of nowhere. And obviously, I liked that whole speech he gave in the middle of the season, just after the defense began to turn around a little bit, just basically just a speech about leadership and not giving up. And it was just like moments like that is where I'm going to miss Kerry Combs.
I thought that speech was the beginning of the end for Kerry McCombs. Like, that speech right there was tending in the direction that he may not be back next year.
Mm-hmm.
Just that was just my opinion on it, but I love the speech, obviously.
I agree with you. I think if you haven't watched that speech, I encourage you to go find it. We can find a way to put it on the Silver Bulletin page somehow too. But it, just take football out of it. That speech is transcendent into life in any part of your circumstances, whether you're, you know, in business or if you're in school or if you're an athlete or if you're, you know, an executive. That it was an excellent speech and showed that he really is a true professional. And he embodied the culture of the university, and he showed that he would do whatever it took as a selfless leader for the betterment of the team. And, you know, it showed through the rest of this year, and ultimately didn't end up with, you know, him coming back, but he still gave his heart and soul no matter what. And he didn't quit on the team.
Yeah. Listen to that speech. Like, it just made me feel terrible about myself too. Like at work, like I'm like, well, I need to put in a better effort at work. Just listen to his attitude on life and stuff. I was like, wow, I am not a good person. But in addition to Kerry Combs, Al Washington's out. Not surprising. He was also on the hot seat. It's surprising how quickly, though, it happened, because last year, highly coveted with Tennessee. Tennessee wanted to, you know, basically bring him in as defensive coordinator. Things changed quickly, though. And now Al Washington's – he's gone. And now Jim Knowles is actually going to do the linebackers, it looks like.
Which I like.
But, I mean, in my opinion, Al Washington's biggest downfall was development. And – he had the talent, but you felt like, you know, he really didn't develop the young guys. He kind of came into a room, I feel like, with tons of leaders, with, you know, Borland, Werner,
Malik Harrison.
Browning. Who?
Malik Harrison.
Malik, yeah, like four studs, already, you know, veterans. He didn't really have to develop them. But the classes below him, he really did. You can tell he didn't really develop them.
I was about to say, he started out strong, in my opinion, because in 2018's defense, this defense last year made everybody forget how bad 2018's defense was. And I was telling a guy at work this, we had the same guys coming back the following season. We end up being the number one defense in the country. Mm-hmm. I hate quoting this dude, but I like this dude because of his takes on Twitter. He's a Team Up North guy. His name is James T. Yoder. Tweeted out He tweeted out 9 hours ago. The fall from grace of Al Washington. And it makes sense if you think about it. Number one, gives up 62 to Ohio State. Number two, pulls a scumbag move of the century, joining the Ohio State coaching staff. Number three, has Tough Borland cover Devontae Smith in the national championship game. Number four, turns down the Tennessee defensive coordinator job. Number five, Hassan Haskins scores 5 touchdowns. Number six, fired. I mean, well, I can't agree more on that. But
here's something no one's bringing up too. He had two linebackers just quit midseason.
Yeah.
And Gant and Pope. And those are supposed to be his, you know, his senior guys. Those guys didn't even make it 4 games and they were done. And you know, we try to point the fingers maybe at like Ryan Day, like, oh, it's maybe a culture issue, but that happens directly in that room right there. That should have been addressed directly in his room. He needs to nip that in the bud or find a solution or at least bring it today. And clearly he did it.
I remember that when that happened. You know, obviously I was at the Akron game. Dan was probably at the game. You were at the Akron game, Blake, when I think it was Pope that, you know, left, you know, threw his headband and shoulder pads and this, you know, left the field, and you know, CJ Barnett escorted him out of the stadium.
Which I'm pretty sure you found his headband.
Wait, I still have that too.
I'm positive you found it because you literally were in the same spot where it was like a week later. For those that don't know, Cass went to he was doing Big Noon Kickoff he was doing something with Fox a week later. He was on the Ohio State sideline like pregame. Not even – it wasn't even before the warm-ups. It was like, yeah. And he found a headband. And we have strong reason to believe on this show that this is Kayvon Pope's headband.
Yeah, right here.
We cannot confirm it, but the evidence adds up.
I mean, I've searched all the way around. I mean, it sat there for a week. Maybe, you know how sometimes the guys will mark what number the headband will go. Like, is hey, Tennessee Jeff, I know you got C.J. Stroud's headband. I might have – Kayvon Pope's headband, okay? I have something better.
Dude, no, I'm telling you, if we can verify this, that's his headband, that should go in the College Football Hall of Fame. Like that is worthy. That's worth something.
I'll put it right next to Antonio Brown's jersey.
It wouldn't go in the College Football Hall of Fame. It would go in the 2021-2022 football season of follies.
Bloopers. Yeah.
Yes.
So, I mean, yeah, Al Washington, I mean, I'm not saying he's the sole blame, but I remember after that happened, people were pointing the finger at Kerry Combs. Like, this is Kerry Combs because he's the defensive coordinator. That's because Buckeye fans don't know the difference between a co-defensive coordinator and a co-defensive coordinator. And they don't know the difference between a linebacker's coach and a defensive coordinator. That's the whole issue. Like, that's the whole problem. I never understood why Kerry Combs got the blame for Dallas Gant and Kayvon Pope, you know, leaving the program. Mm-hmm. And it makes you wonder if Marcus Williamson, you know, he had his tweets during the Rose Bowl, were in either roommates or something with Pope or Gant. Because they all three have been feeling the same way about everything. So it could have been an Al Washington thing. That's the key. And we'll never know until the spring game, honestly. And even then we might not know.
Yeah, I mean, I agree.
I'm not saying Al Washington's a bad guy, but
No. We'll never know what truly happened inside that room.
Yep.
Because it's what happened in that room is behind closed doors. And as Darren Lee said too, they'll never share what happened. He did not want to share what happened with the Brotherhood when you asked him. So that room, it's sacred. It's probably not going to ever come out, but I mean, we're just going to speculate. And that's what we do here. It's a podcast. We're going to speculate. We're going to look at all the evidence we have and make crazy conclusions that might be able to be pieced together, and it's for entertainment purposes. So
absolutely,
exactly. Meanwhile, also I like to point out Jim Knowles is bringing over a ton of guys from Oklahoma State. Yeah, we obviously got that one safety. Now we got Michael Hunter, Coy McFarland, and also we got another quality control guy, my buddy Mitch, who actually has been on the show, knows him from high school, Brent Zedebski. It's hard to pronounce his name. Very good linebacker, he tells me. High character guy, will be a quality control guy for our linebackers. And basically his family has been in coaching forever. And he basically worked with Paul Christ at Wisconsin. So he's basically an up and coming guy coming over Jim Knowles. Once again, Brett Zebski. It's Zedebski. I don't know if it's silent or not. I probably should have looked at the pronunciation, but another high quality guy apparently coming over.
Interesting. That's all I have to say. I mean, interesting.
I just felt like I had to share that.
I think those guys will be great additions to the staff too, because anytime you can bring on the high character guys like that, or especially guys that know like Noel's coaching tendencies and how he thinks and how what he likes and what he looks for on film, like that's great to have on a staff. And it's going to help keep our defense ahead of the curve, because there's going to be a learning curve when, you know, Coach Knowles installs his defense, because it's going to be a different scheme, and it's going to help that be translated down to the players in every room, and you'll be able to look for things on film quicker because you'll have more eyes on it. I think it's going to be great all around, and I'm excited to see what the defense can do in 2022. I think it's going to take a really big step forward.
I honestly think that knowing that Notre Dame, you know, we play Notre Dame, and obviously Jim Knowles is probably already preparing for that game because the type of guy he is, even though it's like 250 days away. But
Oklahoma State was also preparing for Notre Dame too, we forget, you know, in that bowl season. So,
and that offense doesn't scare me.
No.
And Arkansas State's offense don't scare me. I don't know. I mean, obviously we don't know much about Toledo, but they're a MAC school. The defense has a great opportunity that first five games to completely play lights out and get ready for Wisconsin, which is not even a great offense. I think they'll have a better offense coming in, which is a good segue on the way the Big Ten changed their schedule this week.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that the first five games now for Ohio State are at home.
Yeah, it hasn't happened in a long time.
8 home games, 4 away games. It's if you're a Buckeye fan in Ohio, it's the greatest news ever. Just so many home games. They'll probably all be at noon, though, and the media will probably hate on us for having home games. But I'm still excited. More tailgates.
And let's have another noon blackout. Why don't we?
Nebraska. I was at that game. The noon blackout. I'm looking at that. For sure, as a Fox guy, Big noon kickoff is already writing checks for that Notre Dame game.
Oh, 100%.
Absolutely.
I'm okay with that being a noon game. I feel like that's appropriate. It's the first game of the season. It's going to be nice, like hot August, early September weather. I'm cool with it.
And big noon kickoff, I hate to say it, we'll have the Wisconsin game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
But I also see Arkansas State it's going to be the Hall of Fame game where you were the alumni band game. That game's usually 3:30 or twilight game. Always. I know last year alumni was a night game because, Buckeye fans were bitching about not having night games, blah, 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 on Twitter. Somehow Akron became a night game. but the alumni band game is always a 3:30 game. So Akron and Toledo will be twilight games. We might not see our first night game until maybe Wisconsin, because ESPN can say, hey, we want to come to Columbus for the Wisconsin-Ohio State game, depending on what Wisconsin looks like. But we for sure we'll get night game October 29th when we go to Penn State.
It's horrible.
I can tell you right now, Notre Dame's going to be noon. Michigan's going to be noon right off the bat.
Michigan State will be noon because it'll be up there.
Yeah.
Yeah, Penn State will be at night. Have you guys ever been to the Whiteout?
No, I have not.
I have. It is a raucous environment, and it's incredible if you're a Penn State fan. If you're not a part of Penn State, it's the House of Horrors.
I'm afraid to go in there. It's unbelievable.
I mean,
one of my best friends is a huge Penn State fan, and you know, he lives 2 hours from, actually an hour from Penn State, and he went to the Auburn Whiteout game, but he said he's been to multiple Whiteout games, and he said, you know, I went over there during last April just as a visit to visit him. I was wearing an Ohio State windbreaker, and the looks I was getting just for being there during off season was, I was like, I would love to go to a Whiteout, but I'd hope to God they were playing somebody else other than Ohio State. And then I could be out there, you know, wearing a Cincinnati Bengals jersey or something.
Yeah, it's not worth it. I went there and my Ezekiel Elliott jersey is not well received at all. And I mean, I was with my dad and my two cousins and my little brother, and they're both, you know, they were 12 and 13. They're getting cursed out up and down by the kid. I mean, it's like there's no regard for humanity as an away fan going there. And you can't even hear yourself think. The stadium shakes.
What about November 5th at Northwestern?
That game scares me. As like that trap game feel.
I could see that being a trap game.
Just because you're playing Pat Fitzgerald after Iowa and Penn State back-to-back. So you're going to be physical, physical, physical.
I think Iowa will be a night game.
See,
I think Iowa will be a night game.
I could see that being like a blackout.
Yeah. What if, how about week one? What if they flex like those Labor Day weekend games? You don't know what could happen with that. That it's possible they flex that game to another night or
like a Sunday night.
Monday.
Or Monday night. I mean, I don't know if they do a high season on Monday. Well, they did with Virginia Tech.
I remember that because we kicked their butts, didn't we?
Yeah. And Notre Dame played on
Florida State.
Yeah, they played Florida State. I don't know if that was Sunday or Monday, but I know it wasn't Saturday night. This past year.
I think it was Labor Day night.
It might have been Labor Day night.
Yeah, no, it was Sunday because I was still at my campground. Yeah, it was Sunday night.
No, you're right. It was Sunday night. So, yeah.
Ole Miss played Monday night.
Yeah, that game wasn't great. But it wouldn't surprise me. You have two power brands. You're going to get an audience. What? It might be standalone, but, again, I can see that game at noon also.
Big noon kickoffs getting that game. I mean, but I think I will be a night game for sure. I think that'll be our blackout or scarlet out, maybe. Mm-hmm. Maybe they'll bust out an all gray uniform again or something. I think if they do a scarlet out, they need to bring out the black helmets.
Yeah, I want to see them do a gray out. I think we can
again.
I think we can pull it off if we
did it with Penn. They did it with Penn State. In 2017, because I was there.
Yeah, I was there.
That game was awesome.
But it was still a awesome blackout. Voice. It was still a blackout. Like the stands were the blackout. But I see what Dan's trying to say. If you're going to do all gray uniform, have every fan wear gray.
I think it would look really good if we all did like a light gray. It would almost look like a whiteout. It'd be tough. It'd be tough to pull off.
I know gray's the second big color in Ohio State's color scheme, but I feel like as a fan, how much gray do you own? Like for me, I'm thinking of my closet. I've got a lot of scarlet. I have a lot of black. I have some white. Gray, I have, but it's mostly t-shirts.
Yeah, you're right. Cause I'm looking at my, cause I don't have really a closet cause I have too much. I have a lot of, I don't wear like button ups or anything, but I have a lot of t-shirts. I mean, Dan's seen my bedroom, but this is what sits in front of me.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, I don't have a, that's a Sean Wade jersey, by the way.
Good stuff.
I love Sean Wade.
That's a good guy.
But yeah, I love this. I love that a lot of people don't like that they moved the schedule, but if you looked at the old schedule, we played Michigan State, Penn State, and Iowa. Mm-hmm. And then I think Rutgers, those four games back to back to back. I don't know. I think the Rutgers game might have been in between Iowa and Penn State. But even Rutgers is a, you know, they suck, but they play tough. Like I mean,
yeah, Shauna has them playing well.
Yeah. And then, I mean, I do like the fact that we do play Maryland right before Michigan. I mean, that's the trap game I see. But then again, like I was talking to a guy at work, Maryland's one of those teams that outside of 2018 against us, they play very, very well when it comes to teams like Rutgers, Illinois. Mm-hmm. But when they play Ohio State, Michigan, it's just like they fold.
I thought they were going to upset Iowa this year, and then that was way off.
Dan and I were all in New Jersey for the Rutgers game that night before, and we watched it. And obviously he was at his parents' house. I was in a hotel. We were texting back and forth like, this is embarrassing. Like, Maryland did not show up. But yeah, I like the schedule. I like how it's not as top heavy. And I'm looking for the Buckeyes to head to the Peach Bowl other than the Fiesta next year, because we've never been to the Peach Bowl.
That's true.
Like it'd be fun. It's closer.
That's in Atlanta, correct?
Yes, it's in Atlanta.
That would be a good one. I mean, I love Atlanta. It's a great place to go see a sporting event. It's just the Peach Bowl doesn't have it's not as beautiful as the Rose Bowl. Like, you hear Rose Bowl and you're like, wow, like I'd much rather be playing in the Rose Bowl. I don't care if the Peach Bowl is like a college football playoff game. The Rose Bowl just still sounds so much better than the Peach Bowl, but Atlanta's a great venue.
When you think of the New Year's Six Bowls, right? Obviously, the rose is the creme de la creme, and then it's the sugar,
like orange.
I go orange cotton, and then
I would go fiesta, orange peach. Fiesta. I go peach. Orange. I would say orange fiesta, cotton peach.
I'm with Dan.
Yeah, I think the college football playoff. I mean, I love the six games, but I feel like after when you're into the year four, because this is year eight. Now that's the second go around. Oh, yay. The Fiesta and Peach Bowl. Yay. Like, it used to be the second tier. If you look at the old BCS, it was the Fiesta, Orange, Rose, Sugar. Hmm. And in the national championship, it's like,
right.
Well, how did they choose the Peach? Do you think it's just because it was in Atlanta? And that's why, like, I mean, I honestly think – used to think the Citrus Bowl was the bigger bowl game than the Peach Bowl.
Yeah, that's true. I can see that. I mean, the venue, you can. The SEC champion. Yeah, so.
But, yeah.
But
– moving on.
I mean, yeah, I guess – yeah, that's a lot of – we just really previewed that schedule, but – moving on,
that was the unofficial.
They changed one game already, so this might change, honestly. The way Kevin Warren has done things in the past, too, this might change five times. We know how this goes with COVID.
You got to think what letter variant we probably will be on, like the Victor variant, the Victor variant of COVID, you know?
Yeah.
As long as we still have fans when we play Notre Dame. That's what we need.
Hopefully, yeah.
For sure.
No restrictions.
But moving on, I guess, from the schedule and all that, tonight was a basketball game. We just got to stop recording the night there's a basketball game because we're 0-2 already, Indiana and Wisconsin. Just getting absolutely massacred every time we record after a basketball game, apparently. Ohio State loses 68-78 to Wisconsin. Ugly, terrible game. I watched it, but I actually didn't watch it because it was just that bad. Ohio State shot 15.8% from three. Wisconsin shot 43.5%. That's your difference right there. Everything else was about the same. E.J. Liddell played all right, but he fouled out. Justin Ahrens made his first two-pointer of the season, apparently, or the year, they said. Unreal.
He has one of those every year. He had a dunk, last year or the year before? I can't wait for Justin Ahrens to leave. I'm sorry. And the fact that if you go to Ohio State basketball game, and Dan and I went to the Duke game, right? I don't know if you went – have you been to any games, Blake? But Dan and I laughed our asses off when the final player during the lineup, starting lineup was being announced was Justin Ahrens. Like, he's nowhere near our best player. Like, I don't care if he's a senior. Like, this is EJ Liddell's last year. Announce him last.
Yeah, seriously. Also, on the note of EJ Liddell, is he going to win player of the year?
No.
No, it's, I mean, it's so tough.
I think it's the Indiana dude. I honestly like the Indiana dude winning it, the player of the year for the Big Ten.
Yeah, he's a good player. He's got like six out of the eight candidates right now.
I mean, even tonight for Wisconsin, Johnny Davis, he didn't have his best game, but when they flashed the odds actually on the screen before the game, EJ Liddell was about, I think, plus 1,200 to win player of the year. Johnny Davis was plus 750. So right there, I mean, we're already at like the halfway point. Liddell has a shot. I just don't think he's going to do it. I think he would need to really, really, really put in an amazing second half currently.
He needs more Northwestern type games.
He does. Yeah. And the way this is trending, I mean, it's like we said prior to the show, January blues with the team. They've already lost two games already. And it's looking like the same old Ohio State, same old Holtman. It's a story as old as time at this point.
I take it with a grain of salt this time of year. I mean, it'd be nice to get some wins, but it's going to come down to it. We're going to, you know, we play Penn State this week. We'll probably beat Penn State. I mean, Penn State's a terrible road team. We play them Sunday. And it's going to come down to when we play Michigan State in a few weeks. And you watch, all of a sudden, Ohio State beats them, and here comes our run, our February run.
I mean, we do play Penn State on Sunday. I would like to say we should win that, but it is January. I don't know.
I'll be there.
This should be a good one. It's a noon game. And then we play that Tuesday, IUPUI, a game that they just kind of threw on the schedule due to COVID.
I'm glad they picked up that game, though.
Me too. Mm.
Me too. No, I mean, it's big.
But, yeah, I going back to the player of the year, I do like the Indiana kid a lot. I think he, out of most of the players in the Big Ten, I think he has the more NBA upside just because I think he looks like an NBA player out there right now. So, yeah, I think the Buckeyes are still good shape. I really do. I think they would be a 5-seed, 4 or 5-seed going into the tournament. I know a lot of people probably have them ranked higher, but right now that's what they look like, and I'd rather see them as a 4 or 5-seed than a 2-seed.
Yeah, I agree.
I just – because you could get a better matchup. But still a lot of basketball to be played. But there is also still a lot of work to be done. Hopefully we get Justice Suing back soon. They said we're hoping to get him back soon. And hopefully, you know, EJ Liddell can start – you know, once Justice Suing comes back, that might open up a little bit more for EJ Liddell. But Kyle – we haven't seen the Kyle Young of old. Like –
He does not look healthy. I agree with that.
Yeah, this team hasn't played at full strength yet this year, and it's dealt with COVID. So we've not seen the true Ohio State team in a month and a half, I guess, at least.
I like what Malachi Branham's doing, but I feel like he's not playing a full game though, if that makes sense. He had that one big 35-point game, but then recently he'll have a great first half, and then he just won't see him at all in the second half. He'll get, you know, scored 10 quick points in the first half. You won't see another thing out of him all game. And it looks good on the stat sheet, but I would like to see more of him. I know, I mean, it's tough though, cause he's a freshman hitting the freshman wall. I do think you're absolutely right though, about we haven't played our best game. Once we get Suing back, Kyle Young's healthy, Seth Towns, if we get back, we didn't have what's his name tonight, Amici
Johnson.
Yeah, I mean we are missing guys, but it's the Big Ten. You got to find ways to win.
We always miss guys this time of year too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like this team too can go into the tournament and kind of be like that quote unquote underseeded team just because they haven't been at full strength all year, or they're not going to look as good and not have that player continuity and everything. And then all of a sudden, it just kind of clicks right toward the end through the Big Ten tournament. Whether or not they win it or not, they don't have to, but, you know, just kind of become a team. Mm-hmm. And then you go into the tournament and you're at that 4 or 5 seed, like you said, Cass, and then you make a run. And you'd be in much better shape to do it at that point than as the 2 seed and then having to play a 3 or, you know.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
Yeah. I guess, all right. So moving on from basketball, real quick, national championship recap. Nothing long here, but pretty good game. It started out really slow.
I watched the second half.
The second half was really exciting, I thought, up until the last 2 minutes.
Tuesday I did.
Yeah. It was a solid national championship. The Juice Man, though, that was tough to watch. That was really unfortunate. I think all of us were hurting for JMO, especially when he was going to be, you know, arguably a top 10 pick. Now
they still have him projected top 10.
Yeah, they're still going to right now because they're trying to be nice. But I guarantee you, he might fall out of the first round. I would not be shocked, or late first round. I think at this point,
they have the Browns. There's one draft that has the Browns picking him at 12.
I don't know.
Garrett Wilson got taken before that.
That was just unfortunate to see, though, him tearing his ACL.
Because you can't see him possibly try to break the combine record at the combine for 40-yard dash. True. That's what I was excited to see him do. He's that fast. I believe he could have had a chance to break that record.
I'm glad we don't get to see him do that now, because not because he got hurt, just because I would have absolutely lost it if he broke the record and somehow we didn't find a way to use him at all. We imagine saying like Ohio State had the fastest player in NFL history and we just didn't even let him return kicks. Like that would just blow my mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear that. It's hard to also be mad at the whole Jameson Williams thing, just because look what JSN did all year. I mean, that receiver room is absolutely loaded. So it's a really tough argument both ways, but you entertain it because it's true. Jameson Williams went and he ran the SEC this year. It's like, what could have been?
Technically, if you get into the statistics, JSN had a better receiving year. Still, even with the one less game, he finished with more yards than JMO. So you can honestly make the argument. I actually wrote an article on this, just breaking it all down. But it really comes down to how you value their skill sets. Mm-hmm. If you value like a crafty route runner and like leadership skills, then Olave is your best out of that group. If you value just raw talent, just, you know, who has the highest ceiling, I would say Garrett Wilson. If you value just explosiveness, JMO. And if you value just pure hands, chemistry, I would say JSN. It's all four of those guys are number ones.
Yeah, for sure.
And Brian Hartline has all these guys. They are route technicians at this point. I mean, you just see the footwork all looks the same, like whether it's a sideline catcher. You see Marvin Harrison Jr. as a freshman just putting the works on Utah's secondary, you know, the catch in the corner of the end zone, or when he broke it and he caught in the back middle. It's incredible to watch what Hartline's doing in that room.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Speaking of Marvin Harrison Jr., I mean, I'm moving away from the national championship game. Sorry. Like, how was the Rose Bowl? I mean, you got the chance to go out there and, you know, to experience the Rose Bowl. That's number one on my bucket list. But how was your experience out at the Rose Bowl?
The Rose Bowl, you walk into that stadium. And, like, I was thinking about this last night after, you know, we talked. And it just feels like a game that you dress up for, you know what I mean? Like, you don't go to that game in sweatpants. Like, there's that much prestige all with it. And you walk into the stadium, you know, all the tradition, all the history that's been. You know, the San Gabriel Mountains looking down, so it's cinematic. You know, you have the whole scene there. And football just feels different while you're watching it in Pasadena. And it's an electric atmosphere. And I know we didn't get to see it this year because Ohio State and Utah both have, you know, red and their school colors, but, you know, we played Washington and Oregon the last two times we were there. You see the colors are split, you know, right down the middle with the fans in some way. Just everything about the Rose Bowl comes together to just be this incredible, you know, 3.5-4 hours from the time they walk out of the tunnel until, you know, the confetti's falling at the end. It's awesome going there, and it really lives up to the hype, and just seeing these guys work up close on the field, it's really great to watch.
Is it one of the greatest games you've ever witnessed in person? I mean, I know you probably have, you know, did the Sugar Bowl of 2015, but, you know, just the way that game was started out and in the way we came back and in the way we finished.
You never felt like you were going to lose the game. And I said it kind of, I don't know, 2017 Penn State, that game was also up there. I mean, watching that game. And again, the games felt the same to me. I was telling my cousin and my dad, the Utah game felt just like 2017 Penn State game. Things were just not going right for whatever reason, but we weren't out of the game. Like, Ohio State was not out of the game the entire time. You're watching them return a kick like Barkley ran back the opening kickoff of the game. And you're like, you got to be kidding me. That's how you come out of a bye week. And same thing, we're finally getting the momentum there. And then, boom, Utah runs back another kick. And then I actually missed that. So my dad walked out of the room to touchdown before Utah ran back that kick. So I rewound for a second. And in the time that I fast-forwarded to back to live TV, I see the Utah fans celebrating in the end zone. Like, what more happened? Like, no way, they ran back the kick. Just the momentum swings back and forth. And then you're just like, all right, defense got to get one stop. All right, they got the one. Now let's get a second one. You know, it's just kind of building there. And I don't think it was the best game that I've ever witnessed just because of the 2017 Penn State. If I was at the Sugar Bowl when they beat Alabama, that would rank number one. But it's definitely number two.
Yeah, I was on the sidelines for – that was my first Fox gig was 2017 Penn State. That's number one on my list. Number two on my list is 1998 Michigan game. That's just because that was my very first Ohio State game. Mm-hmm. But yeah, those games, I mean, outside of the 06, like out of the Rose Bowls, outside the 06 USC Texas, that's number two. I just think just because of who played in that 06.
For sure.
That 06 Texas USC game, just, you know, that's why it's number one, but number two is Ohio State, Utah. I don't care what anybody says.
Yeah, and Penn State, USC does not have an argument for the people who try to make that. Sorry.
No.
I agree. I guess moving on to our final segment, though, it's our pick-ems. We have guest picker Blake now, I guess, here this week.
We should have that every week just for like our segment, like that last segment. Which, by the way, folks, we're going video next week.
We are.
Our first video. So you get to see the scenes of how we, you know, run this podcast. You know, I've got that program now on my computer that we can run a video for our podcast, put it up on YouTube, put it up on Twitter. We're kind of excited. It may not be live, but it's going to be video of the Bunch of Nuts podcast. So yeah, maybe we have a guest picker just for that segment. That'd be, you know, each one of the weeks we have a different silver bulletin guy come on our guest picker, kind of like College Game Day, but better.
early Corso right now.
Yeah. Get the head.
I don't have any headgear. I don't have any headgear in here. So
we'll get that for the Notre Dame game. We'll do a live show.
Speaking of Lee Corso, I was getting really nervous there. He was going to like announce his retirement during the national championship, like game day. I was getting really nervous. And
I'm not prepared for that.
No, I don't think anyone is. And I was like getting really nervous. Like,
I could see him retiring, but still shortly after retiring, like David Pollack going full go as his predecessor, but still doing the headgear pick every week. Until he finally, unfortunately, is no longer on this earth. I can honestly see that. ESPN doing that.
Yeah, I can't argue with it. It's iconic at this point.
They need to build like a Lee Corso hologram so he can just like, even upon death, like just, will always
like
be
every
picking.
School that he's ever picked, like just push the button and they're putting the Brutus on.
Yeah, I know. We have the technology. We could totally pull that off.
Let's do the picks, man.
All right. The cast, first game you're excited for, or you might be dreading. I don't know.
I'm telling you what, I've never been more excited for an NFL football game in a long time. I was 3 years old the last time we won a playoff game, and it was against the Raiders. That's how ironic it is.
You do know no one in the history of mankind has sent a text message like our, what was it? No one has sent a text message that the Bengals have won a playoff game because the text message was invented after the Bengals last won a playoff game. Mm-hmm. So, first game, Bengals Raiders cast. I'm going Bengals. They're -5.5. Who do you got?
Go Blake. Go Blake.
I've got the Bengals too. Joe Burrow's doing some great things down in Cincinnati. And I think they're going to be a team that's going to stay around now. I don't think this is a joke.
Shame on the Raiders for not playing for the tie. They do not deserve to win.
Oh, man. That was a wild ending.
That might have been – if that ended as a tie, that would have been one of the greatest football games I've ever watched. I was generally mad that the Chargers head coach called a timeout there. I don't know what he was thinking. You could tell, too, there was a mutual agreement that they were just going to let that clock run out.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Seriously.
I know technically the Raiders wanted to win because they didn't have to face the Chiefs, but
– Right.
But –
I'm glad they won because we don't have to play the Patriots.
Yeah, it was safer to just kneel it and just let the clock run out because then they were guaranteed a playoff spot. But shame on the Raiders. They ruined all the fun.
Here it is. January 6, 1991. Big Cass wasn't even 3 years old yet. I was going to be 3 years old that year, obviously. The Bengals are going to get it done. I can feel it. This ain't 2015 where we don't have Vontaze Burfict and Pac-Man Jones out there with a 30-yard personal foul penalty. We have the Rookie of the Year, Ja'Marr Chase, who was just announced tonight, that Rookie of the Year. Bengals won that game against the Houston Oilers, 41-16. I don't think it'll be 41-16 this time, but the Bengals will win pretty handily.
I like
it. I'm confident.
I like that, too.
I like it. Next game we got in Buffalo.
0 degrees.
It's saying high of 11, low 4. That's Saturday in Buffalo. Pats versus Bills. I am taking the Pats in an upset. I think Bill Belichick has something up his sleeve. I think somehow Mac Jones is going to throw the ball 50 times this game as opposed to like the
– What's the win gust going to be?
I don't think it's going to be as bad. It cannot be as bad as last time.
If it's not as bad as last time, Mac Jones has played poorly in their last couple games. Bills are hungry. Give me the Bills.
Okay. What about you, Blake?
So Alabama lost in the national championship, so that means the Patriots are going to get to the Super Bowl. No, that's just that crazy stat that happens.
That is so true.
But in honor of that stat and Alabama losing to Georgia, I'm going to go with the Patriots there. I had a hard time picking against Saban in the game. I mean, obviously, Jameson Williams, didn't play. Is it a different story? I think yes, but it's neither here nor there. I do think the Patriots are going to get it done this time in true football weather. It's going to feel like Lambeau.
I like it. Sunday, January 16th, 1 o'clock, Philadelphia Eagles go play the Buccaneers.
The worst game on the playoff schedule, I'm sorry.
I'm going Eagles here because – always the worst game on the NFL playoff schedule is always the upset. Eagles are going to somehow beat the Bucs. Because they're hurt too. The Bucs are hurt. They're banged up. They're dealing with the AB drama still. I think the Eagles, they have an identity right now. I don't think the Bucs really have an identity other than it's just, hey, Tom Brady, bail us out.
I can't bet against Tom Brady just like nobody can bet against Saban or Belichick, even though I just did. If I bet against Belichick, I can't bet against Tom Brady. Give me the Bucks.
So I'm here in Philly, and Dan, I'm with you in the fact that I would not be surprised to see the Eagles win this game at all, especially they do have an identity, and they didn't know who they were. They were going through an identity crisis at the beginning of the year. They weren't running the ball. Sirianni, first-time coach, he's, figuring things out, and Hurts is starting to play better. Tampa's hurt. The storyline is there. You're playing Tom Brady. Tom Brady's not a mental block to the Eagles. They beat him in the Super Bowl. I think the game is close. I don't know if the Eagles have enough to get it done, so I will say Tampa close, but I really would not be surprised to see the Eagles pull this game out.
I like it. I could see that. Following that game, the Nickelodeon game, the MVP award is on the line. My first question is, all right, who are we taking and two, who's winning the MVP?
What's this game?
49ers, Cowboys. Oh. I'm taking the Cowboys But I'm saying
this is a matchup nightmare for
Jimmy
the Cowboys.
Garoppolo's win the MVP.
This is a matchup nightmare for the Cowboys, honestly. I don't know if they have anybody to guard George Kittle. Debo Samuel's playing out of his mind right now. Cowboys are my Super Bowl pick. I said at the beginning of the year it was Cowboys Chiefs, but I didn't realize fate, the John Madden, Pat Summerall fate would have this game matched up. Because if you go back in classic John Madden, Pat Summerall matchups, it's always the Cowboys and the 49ers, you know, in the 90s. Fate put this game together. But it's the Cowboys. They're at home. I just don't think San Francisco have enough. But they do have some great stars like Kittle and, you know, Debo Samuel. And it all depends if Nick Bosa and company can get put pressure on Dak. So give me the Cowboys.
I got the Cowboys just because I think they're a really they're a complete team. I truly – they got two great running backs, quarterback, solid offensive line, three – well, Gallup's done, but even Cedric Wilson's a good receiver. Dalton Schultz, good tight end. Cooper, CD Lamb. Offense is so complete. Defense is really good this year too with Diggs. You got Parsons. I mean, that's a pretty complete team in my opinion. So I'm taking the Cowboys.
Yeah, I'm with you guys too. I think Dallas has got this game. It's in Jerry World. I think they're going to get it done.
Following that, we have the funeral for Big Ben.
Let me tell you.
He even said they had no shot.
Let me tell you, I know a lot of people say, oh, it could be rigged, blah, 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 blah. But I would not be surprised if the Steelers pulled this off. I really wouldn't.
I wouldn't either, but
just because.
That's true.
Peyton Manning. I'm listening to names. Peyton Manning, Ray Lewis. Who else? There's a few out. John Elway. All went out as winners.
Yeah.
Jerome Bettis. All went out as winners. Steelers are going to play for Big Ben. They're going to pick themselves up for Big Ben. If the Steelers take any type of playbook of what the Bengals did in the second half against Kansas City and run the football, I could really see Pittsburgh winning this. But I still like Andy Reid and the Chiefs because Andy Reid is a good game planner. And it's at Arrowhead, the loudest stadium in the league.
26 degrees too.
I love Najee Harris. I mean, he's a guy he's a guy. If they run it with him, he's a guy that could definitely put the Steelers offensively on his back. The problem is though, they have no offensive line. They have no defensive line. They can't stop the run and they can't establish the run. Every run that Najee Harris makes is literally just all him breaking five tackles for like 5 yards.
Yeah, again, like I said, don't be surprised if the Steelers win, but I like the Chiefs.
I'm going with the Chiefs, but I think that'll be closer than what people think.
Yeah, I think Pittsburgh will play for Big Ben, but 12.5 is a big number. I'm looking at it here at Caesars, but I think Pittsburgh will cover that, but I think Kansas City wins.
Yeah, they're professionals. They'll cover. We got finally Monday. This is weird because this was like a Monday night game. It felt like 2 or 3 weeks ago. Cardinals Rams is in
LA.
Can't believe the Rams won the West. I feel like they were kind of in it, but they really kind of took it from the Cardinals at the last second. It's in LA. This should be interesting. I'm going to go with the Cardinals on this one.
I like the Rams just because Aaron Donald's starting to play better. And I think Matthew Stafford's playing a little bit better. They have Cooper Kupp. And Sonny Michel's running the ball a little bit better. I like the Rams close. I really do. I think Arizona's lost their identity a little bit. But, you know, it's going to be a really good game. I think it might be one of the best games on TV, even though it's at 8 o'clock at night on Monday night. Good job, NFL.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a good game, too. The teams though are trending in both different directions. Arizona struggled. They've, you know, lost four of their last five there. I think that it does play close for three quarters, but I think the Rams win by 10.
Hopkins injury kills the Cardinals.
Yeah.
But I totally see somehow the Cardinals winning this, and I foresee an OBJ like meltdown or something.
I just think Matt Stafford deserves this. He was stuck in Detroit for an eternity.
I see OBJ, Jalen Ramsey fight on the sideline.
Ooh, wait, what? Oh, yeah, they're teammates. Never mind. I had to think about that. I was like, wait, what?
With Von Miller mediating. That's my prediction.
And Aaron Donald just swings at somebody and it hits Sean McVay in the face. I don't know. Blake, who you got in the Super Bowl this year?
I definitely have Green. I think Green Bay is going to get it done with Aaron. I think Aaron Rodgers is he's on a mission this year. I'm torn in the AFC. I've been back and forth here. I wouldn't be surprised to see the Bengals make a run. I don't think they're ready yet. And then same thing, the Patriots and the Bills. I can also see them make a run. I don't think they're ready yet. And it's easy to just say Chiefs and Packers. So that is what my gut tells me. But I just have a feeling Belichick has something up his sleeve.
I said Cowboys Chiefs at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
For some reason I just felt that's what I felt. Mm-hmm. And I'm still gonna go with that. I just, as a Bengals fan, I want us to win one playoff game to get it over it. Get that off our backs. Mm-hmm. We got Joe Cool. Well, I can't say Joe Cool, but as if you listen to the Zach Smith podcast, Jose Barrose at quarterback and his stogies, that dude just, his instincts are so, like, so great.
Savvy.
Like, he's sacked 51 Absolutely. Times still this year, and he still just balls out, has the best wide receiver crew in the league, hands down. No, it's not even close.
He's got some dudes on that offense.
We're just one. I believe we got a pretty good tight end in Uzama, but we're one pass catching tight end away. Jeremy mm-hmm. Ruckert in the second or third round.
That would be awesome.
But I think we're a center away, because most of the pass rush comes up to the middle. Plus, we have the most Buckeyes on our team, honestly. Yeah. I mean, we got Hubbard, we got Eli Apple, we got Von Bell, we got Isaiah Prince. Who's, yes, by the way, nice. Having a pretty good season, Isaiah Prince is. So, I'm excited as a Bengals fan. Just, it feels different than what 2015 and 2013 and 2014 and 2012 felt when we made those playoff runs. It really does, and I think that's just because the Marvin Lewis culture is finally out.
There's no way.
There's a different energy.
There's no way Vontaze Burfict is or Pac-Man Jones is going to ruin this for you.
Like, with a 30-yard penalty.
Yeah.
I mean, we still have Clark Harris and Kevin Huber, who are a long snapper and punter who've been there since, like, they're like 13-year pros. I mean, they're still there, but
I don't think they're going to call. If they cost you the game, then your franchise is cursed.
It would have to be a botched snap on a punt. That's how they would.
Yeah, it would have to be like the Michigan State Michigan game.
Yes, yes.
My Super Bowl pick, I'm going to go with the Titans in the Super Bowl versus the Cowboys. I mentioned the Cowboys.
I like that.
Very complete. Titans. They're not pretty, but they're the one seed, and they're getting healthy. They're getting their Derrick Henry back. Julio hasn't really been healthy. He's going to be healthy. They're the one seed, and they haven't had a 1,000-yard runner or receiver. That's how crazy that is. Like, like usually teams like that don't even make the playoffs. They're the one seed. They're just really coached well. I think they have an identity. It really doesn't matter who they have. They're going to play within their system, but obviously having King Henry, that's a big when you have a guy who knows your system and is a physical freak, that's a game changer. I think getting him back fully healthy for their second round game is going to be huge. So give me the Titans in the Super Bowl. Give me, I guess the Cowboys win it. I don't know.
I don't even know who I have winning it.
I'd say Cowboys.
I believe the Chiefs for me.
I like Mike Vrabel's coach of the year.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Zach Taylor.
Oh yeah, well, true. Zach Taylor's good too.
I mean,
yeah.
Zach Taylor. I mean, but I don't even know if he's been. Tough. I mean, it might be. I don't even know if he's been mentioned for coach of the year. I haven't heard his name, but
I haven't either.
But it's kind of torn to see who comeback player of the year is going to be. Is it going to be Joe Burrow or is it going to be Dak Prescott? Honestly, like, they both have had phenomenal seasons. Like, can you give comeback player of the year?
When's the voting?
I mean, I know Ja'Marr Chase got voted tonight.
Whoever wins more playoff games, that's comeback player of the year.
Yeah, it'd probably be Dak.
Yeah.
I don't know. That really is a good debate between the two of them.
So, Blake, it's been a pleasure having you on. Talk about your little, a little bit of the Rose Bowl that you got to go out there and witness. Broke down the new coaching staff all the way up to the bad basketball loss tonight to our playoff picks. It's been a pleasure having you on.
I appreciate it. It's been great being here. Thank you guys for having me on again. Had a great time.
Oh yeah, Blake, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on. And as always, as I wrap it up, thank you so much for listening to the Bunch of Nuts podcast. Go check out thesilverbulletin.com where Blake and everyone else on staff, Dave, they just write fantastic pieces. But as always, thank you so much for listening to the Bunch of Nuts podcast. And as always, go Bucks.